You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 19 August. We got local July inflation data due 10 a.m. expected 4.5%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today is Mbeli Mabunja, FNB Wealth and Investments. Absa results. Local looking quite good. Rest of the continent struggling. It's this opportunity. Absa's been cheap forever. Isaac Odendale from Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Spain, how it recovered from that devastating economic crisis some 15 years ago. And are there lessons for South Africa? And then we're going to be chatting with PPO Serve, the CEO, on medical savings account, why it disappears so quickly, and what questions should we be asking our medical aid as we renew going into 2027. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Ramaphosa on SA's first electricity pricing policy change in 17 years and what they're looking to achieve. Business Day, Nklanklanene returns to senior public finance role. Former minister returns to chair the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.7%, NASDAQ off 1.7%. The East is mixed. We got Sydney down 0.1%, Tokyo 2.5% lower, and then Hong Kong is up 0.1%, and Tencent a little over 0.5% higher. Commodities mostly red, gold futures 4,410. Brent is the green, 9,170, platinum 1,730, palladium 1,292. The rand is 16.24. Bitcoin 64,300. And top 40 opening call red open 230 points, 0.22% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Check now with Zimeli Mabunja, FNB Wealth and Investments. Zimeli, appreciate the early morning time. We've had Nedbank, we've had Standard Bank with their half-year results out. Absa yesterday. And I got to say, I mean, Absa's, along with Nedbank perhaps, the cheap of our banks. Not a bad sort of numbers. The rest of the continent struggling, but local home doing fairly well. Your thoughts on the Absa numbers?
Morning, Simon. Absolutely agree. The local performance was actually outstanding. Very strong headline earnings growth of 17%. I mean, actually, also if you consider the fact that the group took a lot of pressure from the African franchises, I mean the metrics, the performance metrics were very negative across the board in Africa, but they were still able to produce record profits overall in the group and also issue a record dividend. So if you're looking at that way, you can understand why perhaps the markets was also very muted in its reaction. Obviously, management had provided some guidance before that, and the performance was mostly in line with the guidance. But if you just look at the fact that the pressure is mostly from the Africa regions, it's mostly because of a stronger rand and also lower policy rates, which put pressure on net interest margins. The underlying performance from the South African franchises was extremely, extremely impressive.
It absolutely was. And it then brings the question, because I mean, in many senses, it kind of looked like a lot of it was similar with Nedbank. I mean, you know, ROEs both around 15%, impairments around the same levels, although Absa's coming down 2.95 and Nedbank's moving up to that level. These are the two cheap banks. And is there opportunity here? I mean, if they can get that ROE higher, if they can get, you know, as you say, dividend up, we've been paid, 7% dividend yield to hold them, 7.5%.
That's the one thing that I actually also realized when I look at the results. I was like, this is very similar to what I saw with Nedbank. Both of them also took a lot of pressure from the African franchises. But very similar in rating, very similar in relative valuation as well. I think both of them are trading at around 1.1 price to book. So both very one of the cheaper one of the cheaper, well, the cheaper options when it comes to the Big Four, but also very strong dividend payouts. Obviously, I think with APSA, the downward revisions of the some of the guidance looking forward is a bit of a concern, but it doesn't really necessarily put it much below its peers. But relatively speaking, I mean, but you know, management guided for that, and I think the market also sort of priced that in, given the pre-close briefings that we saw. But yeah, if they can get that ROE around that level that they're guiding for, I mean, they did decrease the guidance for that from 16 to around 15, but that's not necessarily far off of its peers. So I definitely think there is opportunity if, you know, the African businesses can sort of like normalize. And if you look at how the performance is in South Africa, yeah, it looks like they're getting it right.
I get your point. And if African businesses normalize, as you say, they don't need to be outstanding. They just need to normalize. Add that local was outstanding. If they can just push that ROE higher. We'll leave it there. Zimbeli Mabanjwe, he's FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today on LinkedIn. Is APSA turning the corner as an investment? I was reminded of a TV show 15 years ago where someone was like, oh, APSA's cheap at, you know, one times price to book. It's still around that one times, a little higher, 1.2. But have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Isaac Odendahl, strategist at Old Mutual Wealth Investment. Isaac, appreciate the early morning time. A great read that you had out. And it reminded me of, what, about 15 years ago, post the global financial crisis, the troubles in Europe, the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain. You know, the whole worries around Greece defaulting, Spain, etc. They've survived. And in fact, some, I mean, even Greek bonds are looking better. But Spain really has more than survived. In many cases, Spain has thrived since what was a real financial crisis for them back around that 2008-2013.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, so I suppose the lesson is that, you know, countries can bounce back from really difficult situations. And you need a bit of luck. You need the right policies. And you also need just the passage of time, because often... You know, when you have debt problems, you know, those just need to be worked through. The case of Spain, you know, they had to fix the banks, recapitalize the banks before the banking system could support economic growth again. You know, that took a few years. But yeah, at the moment, Spain is the best performing big economy in Europe. And Germany is the one that's struggling, which was a complete reverse from what we saw in the early 2010s.
Absolutely. I mean, Germany was Angela Merkel who kind of, you know, held it all together. Germany was at the heart of it, and they're now struggling. But I like your point around the banks, because if we think around South Africa, and I want to touch into some of the things Spain did that we could potentially do, we don't have a banking crisis. We have a growth crisis. In other words, we are perhaps a little bit ahead because our banks are well capitalized. We don't need to fix them first.
No, so in a sense, that's the good news and the bad news. You know, the good news is our financial system is actually world class. Banks, asset management, you know, the whole and can really, really support economic growth. I think the problem is the financial system needs to see the opportunities to invest in. Today the real thing is around infrastructure projects and, you know, the whole debate around, you know, getting the so-called bankable projects right. Getting that pipeline ready. So the financial system is absolutely ready to support economic growth. The reason I say it's bad news that we don't have a crisis behind us is because, you know, that kind of massive crisis can catalyze action.
Yes.
And you know, we saw some of it, right? So when we had the stage 6 load shedding, that was ultimately the trigger that caused government to really radically reform the electricity sector. So we saw that in the case of electricity and to extent with logistics. But there are other reforms that are slow going. And I think you don't have the impetus behind them because the crisis is not big enough. And you know, because the economy is kind of crawling along at about 1% at the moment. But ultimately I mean, there are lessons we can take from what happened in Spain.
And one of them was they're sort of really going in on sort of green energy, renewable energy, to the point that they've become, you know, exporters of knowledge and exporters of power. And it's something which we are very well positioned to do. And we could even argue that we are in the early stages of that. We're going green. We've got rooftop solar on residential. We've got it in a lot of corporates, the mines, etc. We could do a lot more, though, and it creates economic activity, expertise and growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, unfortunately, we were actually doing quite well in the early 2010s with our renewable energy project. That was ultimately halted by Eskom and the whole state capture story. And now I think we've lost a lot of impetus. We've lost a bit of momentum there. But I think it's definitely picking up. And it is a massive growth industry. Of course, the big bottleneck at the moment is not so much the production of electricity, it's how you move it around.
Yeah.
So it's transmission. And again, you know, this is an area where there's lots of contestation within the electricity sector around, you know, setting up an independent transmission body. I think the president has taken a firm line that we must go ahead with separating this out from Eskom. But it's slow going. But that in itself is also a massive investment opportunity. And I think, again, the financial system is, you know, the banks, the pension funds and so on, very, very excited to be able to lend and invest into that build out of the transmission system, which is going to be thousands and thousands of kilometers of power lines.
Yeah, absolutely, and I take your point. There is some tension, it seems, with the electricity minister and the president and Eskom around that. You also mentioned immigration and how it comes with cons, and we've seen that very much locally as well. But it comes with pros for an economy at the same time. Spain used it to a benefit to a degree, as could we.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing in Europe, Spain, as well as the rest of Europe, is if you look at the aging profile, you know, these countries need to make a choice around, do we want to shrink or do we want to allow immigrants? And it's not for us to say what choice they should make, but ultimately that's the choice. And I think Spain has, because of its kind of colonial history, and it's perhaps more easily able to absorb, you know, Spanish-speaking immigrants from South America, for instance, than it is perhaps for Norway or Sweden to absorb immigrants, just by way of example. But those are the difficult choices that those countries face. But in the case of Spain, yeah, I mean, immigration has helped them grow the economy, grow the labor force, but as in South Africa, there is political noise around it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was a great read, and I think I take it back to the point I made up front and that you made. Countries can recover from devastating economic crises. Make it clear that's where we've been, and Spain shows us that there is a way out of it. We leave it there. Isaac Odendaal, he's from Old Mutual Wealth Investment. He's a strategist. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management. Building wealth doesn't happen by chance. It happens by making the right decisions. Join John Miniaki from Old Mutual at the MoneyWeb Economy and Investing Conference at the Money Summit as he shares practical strategies for building long-term wealth, avoiding common investment mistakes, and creating lasting financial success in the real world. Tuesday, 1 September at the Sandton Convention Center. Register for free using the promo code MoneyWeb. Secure your seat today. Go to moneyweb.co.za and start building a stronger financial future.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Lungile Kasapata, CEO of PPO Serve. Lungile, appreciate the time. Medical savings account. You make the point that they tend to run out by mid-year. I'm not even sure they always make it to mid-year. But they really, I mean, why do they go so quick? It feels that they're just not designed to actually sort of help us or help a family in particular through an entire year.
You've hit the nail on the head. They are not designed appropriately. They're not designed to fit, you know, what the reality of our patients or members on the ground. Good morning, Simon. So we ran straight into the discussion. Yeah,
But that's the point. If I pick it up from there, you and I chatted towards the beginning of the year around sort of rethinking medical aid. And the problem is perhaps is that there's, I don't know, it feels to me, and I've just recently experienced the scenario, not well, go to my doctor, go to my pharmacist, that there's so much working in silos rather than working in, in unison within the sector, within the industry.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, those are the main reasons. Of course, there are many other reasons, but the main reason, Simon, is the design of the benefit. So the design, if you look at it, you know, we all join medical aid because we want to be covered, you know, especially when we do get sick. But actually, healthcare is there to keep us as healthy as possible.
Yeah.
And where we are healthy or we're kept healthy is when we are at home living in the communities and therefore just seeing the GP. But the way that our medical aids are designed, unfortunately, is that they are very heavy or very rich in benefits when you get to hospital and you're really sick. But they're not as heavy or as rich while you are healthy and living outside of the hospital. And that's where you want it to be quite rich, because you want people to seek care when it's still early. You want people to have this proactive care so that it keeps them healthy, preventative care and all of those. And most importantly, you also want your healthcare provider to be working together so that we minimize the waste that we currently see that comes out of the fragmentation and the working in silos of all the people that are responsible for our health.
I get your point, particularly around waste in the industry. But there's also just, I mean, from a simplistic level, it actually brings up levels of risk. And I'm thinking of a scenario where I might wake up not feeling well, and in an ideal world, I should go and see at least a nurse, maybe a doctor. But my benefits are expired, so instead I go to work, which is a lose-lose for literally everybody.
It is exactly a lose-lose. And what you actually see there is that the outcome of that type of behavior, which is a natural and a logical behavior for anybody who does not have extra, you know, funds available for those emergencies, because you're already paying for your medical care. But what actually happens is that people stop seeking care, not because, you know, they don't need the care, but because their medical savings are already depleted. But what then happens is they go to work, they continue with life as normal, and then they hit a crisis. And when they hit a crisis, they have to go to the hospital because now somebody has collapsed, you know, because their blood sugar level was totally out of control. And what then happens is that that costs the scheme, the system, and the individual a lot more in terms of health outcomes. You know, one might get a stroke, one might go into kidney failure. That's a lot more risky. That's a lot more dangerous for the member, but also for the scheme. If you've got somebody who did not go for their glucose diabetes screening or diabetes monitoring, which could have cost 400 rands, 500 rands, whatever it is, on a regular basis, they end up collapsing. They end up going into kidney failure. And now they have to be undergoing dialysis for a long term. That costs the scheme and the whole system, actually, a lot more. So it's counterproductive.
And it comes to that point around being proactive. So then we're in late August. There's going to be decisions made. Folks who are on medical aid, we get asked around, you know, do we want to change policies, et cetera, by our medical aids? That's an annual process. Is there something we should look for? Are there questions we should be asking so that we can get into 2027 smarter about our health and our healthcare and our medical aid and savings?
100%. And in my view, I can tell you now, I think that what is going to shift this conversation and make the structure to accelerate the change is the involvement of the member or the patient being an active participant in the design, in the discussion on how these things are structured. And I think once that happens, medical schemes are going to listen and they are going to change. So one of the things that we need to be asking and one of the things that we need to be demanding from our scheme is that, how do you help me to stay healthy outside of the hospital so that I don't have to go into the hospital? So when we're getting into those options, and unfortunately there are myriads of them, and it does get confusing at times, but it's to hold the schemes accountable, call the scheme and say, okay, I'm preparing now for next year and I want to know, you know, which of these schemes is going to help me to stay as healthy as possible. And of course, you want to be covered if that event that I need a hospital. So those are the questions that members need to be pushing the schemes, to be asking the schemes, because only then will the schemes actually start changing how they are designing these benefits.
But I could. How does that scheme keep me as healthy as possible? That's a great question. How do you keep me out of hospital? Because no one wins when I go to hospital. It becomes a disaster.
Exactly.
We'll leave it there.
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%. Lingilika Zapata, CEO, PPO Serve. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Viv Govende yesterday, who, of course, from Rand Swiss, talking around the unexpected resignations of the SPA chair and deputy chair. We asked if this improved the group's tough situation in a fast-changing retail environment. Viv was very much clear that, man, things are just changing too fast. SPA's getting left behind. We asked you, almost three quarters said no, still tough. Rest was split between yes, but slowly, and some of you saying that you sure hope so. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Capital beyond the traditional banks.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.